You're listening to Don't Blink, the Doctor Who podcast on Golden Spiral Media. I'm David Ward, and joining me is my co-host Wayne Henderson. So don't blink, don't even blink. Welcome back to Don't Blink. I'm David.
And I'm Wayne, and we are practically required to start off with the obvious knock-knock joke. So David, do we dare?
Take it away. Take it away, Wayne.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Doctor.
Doctor who?
Exterminate, and so on and so forth.
We've just recreated about a year and a half solid of my childhood. People making that joke to me because they knew I was a fan.
Fabulous. We had to. If we didn't, we'd have our Whovian status partially revoked.
They would have taken our Whovian cards away, yeah. So that's right, we're discussing Doctor Who, Season 10, Episode 4, Knock Knock. So let's get to the host ratings. We haven't quite gelled yet on a rating, Wayne, so I'm curious to see how you rated this extremely interesting episode.
I'm going to give this one 7 out of 10 dodgy landlords, and from what we hear on the episode, that's pretty normal for students.
Oh, we're close. I'm going to go a little bit lower. 6.5 contracts you should probably read more carefully. Such a strong start to this episode, and there was a lot I really liked about it, but then it all kind of fell away at the ending, so we can get to that later on.
Okay. There's so much good stuff to talk about, and we want you to stay tuned because later in this episode, we're going to share your listener thoughts and theories. But first, David, let's go over what we loved and maybe some things we didn't love so much about Knock Knock.
Well, okay, so let's kick off with the good stuff. I mean, I love a good, spooky, haunted house kind of story. And I did feel a bit, we were talking last week about the being Charlie Brown with the Victorian era stories, that you always want to enjoy them and they're never quite good. I felt a little bit Charlie Brown with this because the Doctor Who's really spooky stories in the new series haven't always been great. But that said, the opening was good, and the kind of setup when they're getting shuttered into the house, I thought was terrific. And some of the dialogue with the Doctor was amazing. And Capaldi, as always, is on form. I really don't want the guy to go. I mean, we need to start a petition now to see if we can keep him as the Doctor.
Whether he comes back as the same doctor or a different doctor, yeah, Capaldi, I think he's knocking it out of the park. And I agree, there is so much hilarity in this episode, especially at the beginning, with the doctor trying to interact with Bill's new roommates. But of course, being a student of age, she just wants him to buzz off and give her some space. But he's not taking the hint.
Yeah, it's a great comic setup. You've got her, so it's a good idea, I thought, in this episode to bring it back down to earth. You get to meet her new friends. It's a very kind of it almost reminded me of Buffy a little bit in the way that there's a great episode of Buffy where the world is coming to an end, and it's going to come to an end on graduation day. And it's a really good way of sort of talking about real life things in a very abstract way. And I think that this show did that with student life. It's actually kind of scary when you go and you meet new people and you move into a strange house. So I really like that they were bringing it back down to earth. But then putting the Doctor in there as the grandfather, you've got a great comic setup.
And he's trying to pass off, I'm not quite old enough. Maybe I'm your father.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And he just does all of those dad things. Like, he's wandering around, like, looking, like, knocking on walls and kind of finding fault with things. I mean, it is really funny. Again, he's trying to protect her life and not just be a slightly fussy dad. But it's like the parent that won't leave when they've just seen their kids' halls of residence or whatever it would be.
I can totally relate to that. When we first took our daughter off to college and set her up in a room with her roommates, it was really hard to leave. And, you know, since this is Doctor Who, I've heard some people really trash this episode. And I think, you know, with plot holes and what have you, but it's Doctor Who. I think you have to have that willing suspension of disbelief and just kind of roll with it because it's not meant to hold up to too much scrutiny.
Well, I kind of like the dynamic. It almost reminds me of when Catherine Tate came on, and it kind of changed the Doctor character quite a lot. I feel like Capaldi's Doctor works so much better with Bill than he did with Clara. I don't think they had that much chemistry, actually. And I apologize to Clara fans, but I actually didn't have a credibility gap with him in this, like playing the fool. I actually thought it worked quite well. Where I did have a credibility gap was with the friends, the other students. To me, they looked like a bunch of, and I apologize to anyone that was an actor in the show, but you had this great performance from David Suchet, but then you've got a bunch of people that just look like 20-year-old people trying to play students, and I didn't buy it. It just felt like such a broad performance to me.
I won't find any fault in that opinion at all. I could definitely see that. I kind of look past the students. I know that they each had their own little individual sections where they were allowed to shine a little bit. But really, like you said, this is mostly about Bill and the Doctor, at least through the first half of the episode. And it was a unique way of building some more of that rapport. And I do think they bounce off each other really well. Sometimes, you know, being here from Southern California, I did have to rewind a little bit because I'm still, even though I'm really liking the Bill character, her accent is so strong. I'm like, rewind. Oh, okay. That's what she said.
Yeah. And there was actually some interesting regional accents on display among her friends as well, which I really liked. A nice little bit of sort of cultural diversity there. Have you seen the Doctor Who spin-off show called Class?
I saw the first 1.5 episodes, and even though it had the actress from Mr. Selfridge, even with her on there, I had to just give up.
I think I'm the only person that liked that show. I truly thought it was better than the last series of Doctor Who. To me, those were much more well-rounded kind of, I'm going to have to say, young people, which makes me feel like the oldest being on the planet. Just
aside from the Doctor.
Aside from the Doctor, it's him and me. That's the weird thing about getting older, is you still feel like you're sort of 20 or 25 until you realize, no, you're not. And you see 20-year-old people on TV and you think, oh, is that what young people are like? I don't know. but to me, the characters in Class were so much more well-rounded, and it just felt a bit odd to kind of go back to something like this where it felt a bit sitcom-y. But enough grumbling about that.
Oh, okay. And I was, in a way, half expecting to be a little more of a crossover between the students on Class and these roommates. I wouldn't have been surprised at all if two or three of the ones from Class would have been in this mix for at least this episode, but alas, no.
Now, what we did have is Harry Sullivan's grandson.
Tell us about that, because I didn't pick up on that at all, but I've heard some rumblings.
Yeah, my understanding is that Harry is the grandson of Harry Sullivan, who was the Tom Baker assistant that you saw in the Ark in Space, which I'm glad they didn't make a big selling point of, because you had to know it to know it was there in the episode. But just a little nod to the past that, again, kind of seemed a little superfluous.
I love all the nods to the past. I wish I was able to catch most of them on first watch. I know, David, you with your historical Doctor Who knowledge of all the seasons, pretty much, you probably picked up on it immediately, right?
Yeah, and there were some lovely lines where they're talking about the Time Lords, and she says, "Well, she wear robes and hats," and the Doctor says, "No, just big collars." he doesn't play it for laughs. It's just he looks sort of slightly. His expression in that scene is brilliant, and you get Harriet Jones reference as well, which is great from the new series. But it felt like this whole thing was seeded with different references from the past, which is great. I mean, I like it, but I don't know. What have you been reading on the internet about this episode and people's reactions to it?
We've got some great listener feedback later in this episode, but I've heard, you know, all sorts of reactions, people that love it, people that think it's going to go down as a classic because of how visual it is, and other people that are kind of thinking that, you know, we're stretching the fact that we have to overlook a lot of plot holes far too far. But with Doctor Who, you know, and this, you know, being episode 4 of this season, I think they're still kind of laying groundwork before all heck breaks loose and we get to the fantastic things that are going to be coming our way. In fact, I would not be surprised if next week we get a lot of that, and if not, the following week for sure.
Yeah, I think we're building up to some big things. And next week's one is one of those episodes that's been really, even like before the first episode aired, it was kind of like that was Oxygen was the one that was the one to watch. So I'm kind of excited about that. And the whole kind of storyline of the vault is kind of warming up, although it's looking more and more like if it's not the master in the vault, it's a huge piece of misdirection. And I think we'll get to that a bit later on. I thought this was a corking story up until the reveal of those woodlice things. That, to me, is where things really started to struggle. Did the effects guy take a day off? Like, what was going on? They looked, to me, just so unfinished and unrendered.
I don't know. Like when a swarm of them go up and basically swallow up one of the students and then they just disappear.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know they were going for the super creep factor. Like we're supposed to go to bed and be wary of anything that might be tickling our neck that might possibly be a beetle crawling on us. But it was still confusing how it was supposed to all tie into the house. I just tried to overlook it because the character of Eliza that was there, the daughter who we actually find out later is the mother, I thought her character, even though it was kind of strange, it was just, you could not look away.
Yeah, it was strange. I mean, so you've got a great setup. You've, like we said, you've got the doctor in the house with the students. So a great comic kind of potential there. Then you've got the creepy landlord. My goodness, I apologize I don't apologize to landlords. In fact, I've never had a landlord that's not been creepy. So a great idea for a villain. I remember having one landlord who, he was an eccentric old guy. And I remember going to his house, very similar to this house, actually, in this Doctor episode, to pay his rent and hearing this very bombastic music as I walked in. I go into his study and he's listening to the CD. He's got it propped up. And it's a bootleg CD and it's called Marching Songs of the Third Reich. That was an actual landlord I had. Another guy in Britain. Another guy had us sign a contract that it was written in shillings, like the old school coinage from like this 50s and 60s.
Really?
Yeah, he was 80 years old and he got in a fist fight with one of my friends who was 20. It made no sense. All landlords are inherently creepy. So what a great idea for a bad guy in a Doctor Who episode. And I thought David Suchet played him perfectly. I kept expecting him to act to the back of the room, and he did it really, really well. I love that.
I would say the first 30 seconds that we see him on the show, he seems like a regular nice guy that wants to help out. But another 30 seconds later, all of a sudden the creep factor is starting to come in. And let me ask you, David, without, you know, divulging particular cities or what have you, are both of those landlords from your past, they were both when you were in the UK?
No, the Nazi was in Baltimore City, as it happens. Yeah, the other was in Exeter in Devonshire.
Oh, okay. So it's equal opportunity, this job title sometimes.
the world over, they're bizarre people with but I thought he played it so well, and then you throw in this very kind of Moffat-y type concept of, well, what is it that makes your floorboards creak at night or the walls creak? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll buy that. This should have, but I felt they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, and they didn't, like, they needed to take a step back and I think make whatever the monster was a lot creepier. You see the scene where the guy, was it Pavel, is sort of meshed into the wall, which was very kind of H.R. Geiger, Alien. And quite sinister, and that had potential. But then you bring in the woodlice, and it's like, oh, I get it. Okay, that's what it's going to be.
And somehow they also control all the windows and doors and shutters just flying shut. You know, it happens a lot at your house, but not necessarily woodlice. But I will say that even though a lot of the plot and other stuff might have gone off the rails a little bit around this part of the episode, I have to say I absolutely loved the bittersweet scene between the doctor and the landlord and Eliza, as we find out that no, the landlord is not her father. he's actually Eliza's son. And I thought, you know, aside from the wood lice side of it, that whole little moment, maybe I'm just sappy, but that really touched me.
Oh yeah, I did. I'm an easy mark for those kind of emotional things, and it didn't zing with me. I did think the reveal where she kind of comes around the side of the screen was actually pretty intense. It was kind of horrifying. But then you've got this sort of CG wood creature, which I'm like, why is she wooden? Why do they have like a pet Evil Dead tree outside? Like, there are so many questions.
Maybe Eliza is a long lost relative of Pinocchio. Somebody had told me, and I hadn't done the research because, well, for that matter, I just love how it looks. But somebody had told me that they heard that it was not CGI, that it was makeup.
Well, okay, it may have been, but it had that uncanny valley factor. It looked like, I'm surprised, and I'm stuttering because I'm surprised to hear that. That's the next level of bad, when physical makeup looks like bad CG.
That's something I've never heard of before, but yeah, they may have been misinformed, not sure.
No, I might be right. I'm actually looking at it now on my screen, and it probably is true, but my impression was it was just motion capture and not a practical effect at all. So that's a whole like new sort of spiral of odd.
It was very, very odd. And wait till you see the post image that goes along with this post. I found a good screen grab of her, whether she's CGI or not. It definitely stands out when you just look at that photo. Even if you're not a Doctor Who fan and you didn't see the episode and you see this photo, you're like, what the heck?
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to seeing it. So now you're going to tell me the wood lice were actually real as well. They were practical effect as well.
That would be epic if those young actors stood around and let wood lice crawl all over them to that magnitude.
And David Suchet was actually Rogue One. And that was all animated in the performance I praised. Perfect. I basically know nothing about this episode.
Although it could be at the end of almost any Doctor Who episode, these final scenes where we get little more teases about the vault. How can you not rewatch multiple times that final scene of Knock Knock where the Doctor's opening the vault and there's a piano and all sorts of little clues, or like you alluded to earlier, David, misdirection. That scene alone is worth watching Knock Knock over and over.
Yeah, it was interesting. Another food reference where he's talking about, it almost felt like, you know how they say you should never go grocery shopping when you're hungry?
Yes.
It felt like this episode was written by someone that was really hungry when they were writing it, because there's so many food references in it, like with the Chinese crackers, and then he brings this Chinese food, and then the house is hungry, and then he brings food at the end, and I'm sure a bunch of others too. But yeah, it's that end vault scene was interesting. Now, this is going to sound dated when the series is all done and we know everything that happens. But as we're watching it unfold, essentially it was leaked that John Sim was going to be in the series. So it would be a real shame in a way if that was the big reveal, that it's Sim's master. But at the same time, even kind of knowing it might be him is kind of cool. And I think, because obviously Sim's master was eating people.
Yes.
And so when the doctor says, when the doctor says, oh, you'd like that, it seems to me that that's maybe who's in there, but we'll see.
If it is, they're being awfully cordial with each other.
Which is also true, because they have such a strange relationship to begin with, and they always have been very cordial, which is quite an odd thing when you take a step back and look at the things that the master has done. It's sort of quite an... I mean, that's friendship, you know, that you would sort of forgive someone for trying to destroy the entire universe.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad knocking it.
Knocking it?
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's all good. It just didn't click for me. I felt like great performance from David Suchet, great performance from Peter Capaldi, and bunch of wasted potential, and I am actually going to do it. I want to write a really spooky episode for Doctor Who, and this has sort of inspired me to do it. I know what it's going to be, so it'll probably end up as a piece of fan fiction in some dank corner of the internet, but I'm going to try and do it, because I think they need to do a good solid Halloween episode, and they've not done it yet. So this episode got pretty close. And when we get to Doctor Who homework, there's another one that I think is really great. But I'm gonna say vote no to CGI wood lice, and I'm gonna vote a huge two thumbs down to all of the characters that died being restored again at the end of the episode. It's like, really, let's not do that.
It was a very abrupt happy ending.
It really was, and it was unearned. But I hope other people enjoyed it, maybe a bit more than I did in the second half. And I'm looking forward to hearing what our listeners, we'll go back to get to that, to hear what our listeners thought. And also for next week, let us know your worst landlord stories and tell us any landlords that you've encountered that may be aliens, as I certainly have encountered them. So,
because I think it very well could be possible. So yes, give us a call at area code 304-837-2278 or by using the voicemail widget from anywhere in the world at don'tblinkpodcast.com.
It might be that landlords are actually a species. You know, they're all related genetically. We don't know. So
anything's possible when you have wood lice keeping people alive for decades upon decades and making them look like trees.
It makes no sense.
Just got to roll with it, I suppose. But yeah, I think we've reached, in fact, I'm going to state it right here now. I predict that this is a pivot point in this particular series of Doctor Who, and that starting next week, it's going to be a whole different ball game from here on out.
I think it will go darker. I think it will go to some interesting places. I think that there are so many hints about Susan Foreman at this point. It's like, you can't drop that many grandfather references and not go there. And, Capaldi's look when he talks about regeneration. You remember that little scene in the TARDIS where very sad. So we're going to see a bunch of stuff. I think really unraveling more quickly than we think it might be. Oh, that's another thing. That's another thing. But I remember when I watched The Time of the Doctor, and I've told this story on Don't Blink before, I wasn't a big fan of Matt Smith, but I remember when we were about to press play to watch his last story, we actually took like another half an hour, because I'm like, once he goes, you know, like, right. it's gonna be sad. And so we just took an extra few. Let's let it breathe and not watch it just quite yet. I think that in this series, they're going to really surprise us with the regeneration. I don't think you're going to get that moment of build-up where you're like, oh, it's going to happen on Saturday evening next week. It's going to be sad. I think it's just going to come out of the left field and be surprising. So I think that's one of the tricks that this series has got up its sleeve, but we'll see.
Interesting. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
So why don't we go to some listener feedback? Because our favorite thing is our listeners and hearing from them.
Absolutely. Here we go. Kicking it off with Jeff Gentry.
Hello, David and Wayne. This is X-Force 11, Jeff, calling in for my thoughts on Knock Knock. Wow, I always enjoy a good ghost story. I know this wasn't a ghost story, but it was a fun ride. I love the house. I love the House Hunters Doctor Who edition. I love the Doctor as caretaker again, / home inspector. I just really enjoyed a lot about this episode. But I have some thoughts on the end. What is it with our showrunner and having siblings / enemies kept in cells, locked up, and playing instruments? Seems like he's stuck on a theme. Well, I do enjoy it. I'm looking forward to seeing what's next. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Jeff Gentry, thanks for sending that in with music, accompaniment, and everything.
House Hunters Doctor edition, absolutely.
You know, that would have made a very interesting episode if they went to two or three homes and had to pick the right one and then call in the Property Brothers to make it over. Yeah, I see a theme going here. But what is it about what Jeff mentioned with having enemies or relatives in cells and things?
Well, and you know, which relative is it in the vault? You've got to wonder. There's a very kind of Hannibal Lecter type thing to having a cannibal in a room, locked in a room playing a piano, if that's who's in there, if it is the master.
I think we're going to find out pretty quick, but man, they are teasing it very well. And after what you said last week, I really looked at the outside and that's definitely Gallifreyan writing. I guess you would call it writing.
Yeah. Oh, incidentally, to the point about house hunters and other things to do with this episode, sort of spooky factor, there was a really interesting script from series 4 that was actually never used. And it was going to be the doctor was on so Donna was at home watching television. And the doctor was on one of those ghost hunters type shows that was going to be broadcast live. And it was a really cool script. I think Russell T. Davis wrote that they for some reason never went with. But I that would have been a really great, spooky kind of episode. Yeah. And so I think there was even some talk about filming it like broadcasting it live. But she, and the idea was that she would be at home watching him kind of go through this adventure and it would be sort of broadcast nationally. I don't know.
That is,
seemed like a good pitch.
That is really cool. And when you say Donna, you mean Donna Noble?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. That would have been fairly recent, I guess. That would have been cool.
Yeah, it was a Series 4 script that got bumped, but it was one of the ones I really wish they'd have done.
Well, maybe they'll pull it back out of the hat in the future and repurpose it for an upcoming Doctor. Now, I did post out in our weekly Twitter poll. On Twitter, we are at Doctor Who GSM, and wanted to know about the listeners. What or who do you think we'll eventually see in the vault? Because that's what we all want to know. And only 19% of the people voted that they think it's the next Doctor, which is my particular vote. 31% went with the Master, and 38% went with it being possibly Missy. And I know we did get a comment that said technically the Master and Missy are the same thing, but okay, we're breaking it down for semantics. And 12% said other. And somebody said it might even be Savitar, which I have no idea what that means, but they included a winky face.
I had to look it up. Isn't it something from The Flash?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well,
that would be quite a shock.
It's just a completely, someone from an entirely different franchise, yeah.
So everybody's kind of on board that it's probably either the Master or Missy. So
Yeah, I think so. So we had some other great feedback. Ray Mays emailed. So he gave it a 5.5 out of 10. The plot's a little, Ray says, the plot's a little more horror-like than sci-fi. I would have found most of the story more entertaining with Matt Smith's Doctor than Capaldi's, which is true. I can see that I'm digressing now, but I can see this is a very Matt Smith episode in a lot of ways. How much time elapsed since the last episode? What's been going on during that time? Why isn't Bill off traveling with the Doctor and moving in with her friends? David Suchet's landlord was awesome, and the other supporting cast members were okay. The basic plot was pretty good, using the space lice to turn Eliza into wood to save her, and how far her son would go to protect her. But the entire episode tends to be just a setup for the closing scene. Whoever's inside the vault that the Doctor has sworn to protect is someone he has affection for. He gave them a piano and shares meals with them. There are indications that whoever's inside was once a fellow traveler in time and space. I know you miss it all. The Doctor says, but I'm stuck here too. We're both prisoners. That doesn't mean that whoever's inside the vault is a nice person. They seem thrilled by the idea of young people getting eaten. Something big's coming.
Ray, that's a great point. I forgot about that line and the fact that bringing in a piano and food and just having a chit chat. Yeah, that is good stuff. Thank you so much, Ray. 5.5 out of 10. That's not even as high as yours.
It's so interesting because if it hadn't leaked that John Sim was in the show, they would set you up to think it was Missy, and then it would actually be the male master. And so now it's like it's kind of a confusing thing to decide whether. I mean, did they release that on purpose? We don't know.
I think they may have, because haven't we seen him in some of the BBC promotional materials?
Yeah, they put him in the trailer, and the question was, did they cut that in once it was, I think one of the Daily Mail or one of those papers released, the Sun, I think, said that he was in it, so.
Okay.
Because it seems so obviously signposted, that it is the Master, that you kind of then think, well, maybe it's something else, but we'll see.
It might even be his granddaughter. Anything's possible. I can't wait to find out. We also got a message posted on the don'tblinkpodcast.com website from Monica regarding last week's Thin Ice episode. She wanted to share with us that so far Thin Ice is her favorite episode this season. She's really liking the Bill and Doctor relationship. And she agrees, speaking of Ray Mays, with Ray, that at least Thin Ice was classic sci-fi at its best.
Yeah, well, Thin Ice, I've rewatched a bunch of times, and it just felt like it worked, and everything went with the grain, and that's okay. They can't all be winners.
That's true. Otherwise, we'd be handing out tens left and right, but I'm saving those up for something that really blows my socks off, that forces me to watch it twice in a row because I have to figure it out and all that good stuff. And Neil from Bowie, he posted an interesting message, and he wanted to know, so listeners, if you do know, contact us. He wants to know if there is a binaural mix for this episode that's available for any web players here in the U.S. It's a surround sound mix that works with just plain headphones. He tried to get it from the BBC site for the iPlayer, I guess they call it, but it won't let him because it only works for UK IP addresses, and he's here in the States. So the only thing I can think of is that's why people use VPNs sometime. But so is there a big call, the binaural mix in headphones sounding kind of surround sound? I could see it being effective for all the different knocks going on in that creepy house.
Well, you know, to me, it felt like because I read that they were doing that. So first of all, Neil, I don't know the answer to that. I hope it's on the Blu-ray. And given that they released the 3D version of Day of the Doctor on Blu-ray, I wouldn't be surprised if they put the binaural version on the Series 10 set. I hope they do. But I felt like it was a little bit of a publicity stunt that they were, because I read that they were doing this binaural mix, and then you watch it and you're like, well, okay, I suppose, I don't know. Like, it reminded me almost of like something like, remember that Night of the Tingler, that movie that you would supposedly get electric shocks when you're at the movie theater, like that old school, like B movie showmanship. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, it would be this movie will cause you to faint, or you know, the little gimmicks that they would have.
Smell-o-vision.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. No. Right. So, watching it, I can't think. I find it hard to believe that this episode would be significantly improved by having a really good surround sound binaural mix. I mean, it wasn't like, it's not like Saving Private Ryan, is it? Or like The Ring or something like that. But perhaps it would be a 10 out of 10 episode with the binaural mix and the jokes on me. I don't know.
Yeah, anything's possible. You would be freaking out at the sound of all those wood beetles crawling on you.
So Gary Anderson said, I'm a fan of Peter Capaldi and Pearl Mackey. Bill is a breath of fresh air, even though I enjoy Clara. If this is the last season for both Capaldi and Mackey, I'll miss their chemistry and talent. Peter Capaldi is in my top tier favorites as the Doctor. Knock Knock is a perfect example of why I feel that way. His affecting and nuanced performance jumped between playing the paternal protector, curious investigator, and alien slash supernatural slash science expert. That was quintessential Doctor Who, and one could see the sense of joy he had in this episode. My first Doctor was Tom Baker. He was the perfect mix of these three. He was the perfect mix of these three impulses, as well as And Capaldi is the first person to get that mix right for my taste. Although I have enjoyed the last two seasons, I think this might be my favorite if the future episodes continue in this manner. I was not a fan of Matt Smith and was happy to see him go. The boyfriend Doctor motif is not my preference. He is hoping they choose to steer clear from that interpretation for the next Doctor. Finally, I really enjoy the podcast. Keep up the good work, guys. You're doing a fine job. Well, thank you very much, Gary. I appreciate that. And I agree entirely with your sentiments. He does have that Capaldi does have that Tom Baker nuance. And you can tell this is an actor that is also a big Doctor Who fan. It's all in there. He knows how to put the ingredients in and bake the cake of the character, which I think is incredible.
Oh, absolutely. And I totally agree as well, Gary. With Peter Capaldi having so many years of experience and so much talent, he's able to do those things with so much confidence. And you can see that little look in his eye as well, that he knows what he's doing and he knows he's doing it well. And I love it.
Yeah. Supposedly when he first took the job, he was shown on set and someone was trying to tell him where the controls were on the TARDIS. And he said, I know how to fly this.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have been there for that first impression.
I know. Imagine.
Oh, my goodness. Jeff Gentry also sent along this article from the BBC America website where they go over the 10 things you may not know about the Knock Knock episode. And we'll link to it in our show notes at don'tblinkpodcast.com. So we're not going to go over all of them, just a few that jumped out at us. For example, I'll take the first one. Mike Bartlett, who wrote this episode, originally planned, like you talked about, David, you did know this. I did not. He originally planned for the character Harry to be the grandson of the fourth Doctor's beefy companion, Harry Sullivan. He told Doctor Who magazine, it was a reference I enjoyed hugely because I love Harry Sullivan. And housemate Harry has, I think, that similar sort of attitude of energetic sort of pluck. And it was decided that in 2017, people might not remember one companion from 40 years ago, so it got cut out. So it sounds like, David, that they actually explored that relationship a little bit further, and maybe it would have made a little more sense to me that he's supposed to be related to that.
Yeah, beefy companion. That's a very interesting. And actually, your predecessor was convinced that I look like Harry Sullivan from Doctor Who, and I'm not sure that I do whatsoever. But I promised to like cosplay him and put it on the Don't Blink Twitter. So maybe I should. Maybe this is the excuse I need to do that.
I think this is almost a must do at this point. The crowd is calling for it, David.
That's right. And also a shout out to Jeremy. Hope you're doing well, my friend, and enjoying the series. Another piece of trivia on this list, the house, if it looks familiar, it was famous in Doctor Who circles as being the location for Blink, which is our namesake, of course. So that house has turned up in a bunch of different places, I think. And
the same building?
Yeah, apparently.
I thought it looked, you know, kind of familiar and creepy. I'm sure they filmed it from different angles, but that's interesting. They went back to that well, so to speak, yet again.
Yeah, I think Doctor Who looks very expensive, and it is in some ways, but they're very clever with their locations, and a lot of it is determined by what's close to Cardiff, I think, which is where their HQ is. So they do sort of go back to different places. But if you're ever in any of our listeners, if you ever get a chance to go to if you're American listeners, you go to Great Britain, I highly encourage you to visit Wales. It's an extraordinary place for a bunch of different reasons. And the Doctor Who locations in Cardiff are amazing. So you've got Torchwood Hub and all of those kinds of places. So well worth a look.
When I make it overseas, I'm definitely going to check all of that out. I hear, is that where the Doctor Who experience is?
For the time being, yeah.
Oh, which it may is an move?
It may move, yeah. But it's an incredible exhibition, and you can get to walk onto the actual David Tennant TARDIS set, and it's just the coolest thing you ever do. And I'm also sure. It's so much fun. So best like £20 you'll ever spend.
One of the other tidbits from this list, and again, go to don'tblinkpodcast.com and click the link to read the full article of things that you may or may not know. Obviously, David knew a few more than what they thought we wouldn't know, but they mentioned that it's often been left deliberately unclear whether the Doctor has a medical degree or not. His knowledge of biology is strong, and the second Doctor claimed to have got his medical qualifications in Glasgow in 1888, which may not have prepared him for the rigors of modern medicine in any case. The third Doctor claimed to be a doctor of quote-unquote practically everything, but both the first and fourth Doctors fought shy of being labeled as medical practitioners, although the second, fourth, 8th, 10th, and 11th Doctors all carried a stethoscope in their pockets. What say you, David?
Yeah, I think didn't the second Doctor say he was it Graham Lister? I forget who he said he studied medicine under, but it was a Victorian teacher that he had. So which was in an episode called The Moon Base, which I love. So it's never quite clear if he's a medical doctor. There are times where he really does step up and act like one. This is an old episode called Frontiers with Peter Davison, where he definitely steps up and sort of seems like an accomplished surgeon. But I love the gag that it's never quite clear what his qualifications are exactly.
Now, with or without qualifications, he does have a couple thousand years of real world experience. And David, it seems like he has a magic index finger.
Exactly. Yeah. This is one of the other points in Jess's article. He uses it to tell the actual year that he's in before the flood. He always does the thing which, you know, finding the directions, the flight deck of the spaceship in Flesh and Stone is one thing in this article. Weirdly, which of the moons of Delta Magna he has landed on, apparently, which was in the Power of Kroll.
That is a magic finger.
It's a magic finger, yeah. What it doesn't mention here is also that in the Seventh Doctor era, he can pretty much stun someone with his fingers, almost like a Spock kind of Vulcan death grip.
Really?
So, yeah, he got quite powerful in the Sylvester McCoy era, which actually brings us along to our Doctor Who homework for the week, which I'm quite excited about because it's something a little bit different this week.
I love having the homework. Everybody get out your pens, pencils, or iPads. Take notes. What is our assignment this week? Because I did watch last week's The Terror of the Zygons.
Let's talk about that. What was your impression of that, Wayne? Did you enjoy it? You don't have to be nice.
Well, let me... I liked it better than the assignment from the week before. And I was actually quite surprised that the Zygons haven't changed all that much, considering it's been like 30 years or so since this episode. So the Zygons, pretty much the same. I recognized them right away. But you did drop a little hint there to beware of a particular water monster at the very end of the episode. And wow, words do not describe. I mean, I saw better special effects from Godzilla versus the giant moth, you know, in the 50s. That sea monster, I don't know what they were thinking, but that was the worst in the history of television.
No, it's not, though, because I wish that were true. The Doctor Who has far worse special effects. I'm talking about Invasion of the Dinosaurs, for those that have seen that episode. It's a whole episode full of far worse puppets. Well, that literally, they don't roar, they say the word roar. It's brilliant.
That is fantastic. I will say, I was watching them on whatever night it was. My wife dozed off on the couch, so I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch some of my Doctor Who homework. And she woke up right about that scene, because I guess
she did.
There was some noisy sound effects or something. She woke up and she's like, what are you watching?
Homework. But it is a good story, though, don't you think? I mean, the Zygons do look incredible. And the location filming in Scotland, I just thought was so good. And the music is so eerie and evocative and gentle and just well-directed. Sarah Jane Smith's in it. And I really enjoyed that. Yeah, she's so good. So for this week, we're actually going to take the last ever Doctor Who episode that was filmed. It wasn't the last one broadcast, but the last one that was filmed, and it's called Ghostlight. And it's a Sylvester McCoy story. It's only three episodes, so it's a shorter one. And it's set in a Victorian haunted house. And there are many similarities that you can check off between that episode and Knock Knock. It's also an incredibly brilliant script. There's just so many great lines, and it's a very complicated script. So a lot of people will watch it and say, what the dickens did I just see? That's normal. Don't worry. But it's an atmosphere piece. It's really amazing. The Doctor takes his companion Ace to a haunted house for an initiative test. And she's terrified of haunted houses. And it sort of slowly starts to, the plot sort of reveals that there are monsters there and that there are, there's an alien plot against Queen Victoria herself.
Whoa.
It's just lovely. It's such a cool piece of TV. It's very different. It's very weird. So you're going to go down a rabbit hole with this one. But I love it. And, The script editor, Andrew Cartmel, will be on our show very shortly. We interviewed him and we talked about Ghostlight a little bit when we did that. So it's on BritBox, I'm sure. Thank you, BritBox, for having all of this stuff. And I really would love to hear what people think about this, because it's such an oddball piece of television, and you either love it or you hate it. But I think you should love it.
I love television shows where at the end of the episode, I ask myself, what did I just see? So I'm looking forward to seeing Ghostlight. Do you recall, David, do we get any glimpse at all of who the landlord is of this haunted house?
Oh, that's a great question. We meet the owner, I suppose, who is also absolutely horrible and bizarre. So that all kind of checks out. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'll keep my eyes peeled for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. So many great lines. And Sylvester McCoy, a very maligned doctor. And he did.
How so?
Well, his performance in his first series was not the best, I have to confess. But he is a very intelligent actor, and he figured out where to go with it. And so by the time at the end of his run, he was just great and very sort of sinister and lovely and funny. The dynamic between him and Ace is, she literally calls him the professor. So that's one of the, you know, it's that Pygmalion thing, you know, it's the Eliza Doolittle thing. But so many kind of parallels between then and what we have now with Bill. So Ghostlight, 3 episodes, you can't go wrong.
And do you know if when they filmed these, you said they were the last ones filmed, did they know that this was going to be the end?
Oh, that's a really good question. They found out quite late in the day that the series probably wouldn't be coming back. So no, when they wrote them, they didn't know. But the last one they transmitted, they redubbed a voiceover at the end. So there was a kind of closing speech that as the Doctor and Ace walk off into the sunset. So they did have a kind of way to close the show down, but they really, it was kind of a surprise and it was very sad. And the idea was it was going to be shelved for a couple of years so the BBC could find people that would be able to make it with a bit more money. And it took a little bit longer than 2 or 3 years, but yes, it all worked out in the end. So
that's true. If there would have been podcasts back in the 60s, 70s and 80s, could have been a whole different ballgame.
Oh, that's a good idea. We should do like a mock 1963 podcast with like scratchy old microphones and really posh BBC accents.
And we'll send them out to listeners on vinyl LPs.
On wax. Yeah.
Yes.
Good so times. If you want to do, yeah, we'll do a podcast cosplay. There must be podcasts that do this. That are like fake vintage podcasts. Because if there aren't, we should get on this.
If nothing else, if I don't have access to the wax, we could send it out to a few listeners on a reel-to-reel tape. The editing is going to be hard, but
you're listening to Don't Blink on the Golden Spiral Media Network.
Thanks for joining us.
Sponsored by Pathé News.
Of course. Well, I am looking forward to watching Ghostlight. The way you've described it and knowing that it was kind of the bittersweet ending of an era, can't wait to see it. Ghostlight.
Yeah, and watch it, folks at home. Tell us what you think. As always, thank you so much for listening. We do this for our listeners, and as I've said before, for my friends, so I don't have to bore them with my opinions on Doctor Who in real life. They are extremely grateful to you all. And we can't wait to talk to you again next week about Oxygen.
Absolutely. So be sure to subscribe. That way you never miss an episode. It's totally free. iTunes, Android phones. It's all over the place. I guess it's now called Apple Podcasts. But either way, subscribe. Never miss an episode. We'll be back very, very soon. And all the details will be at don'tblinkpodcast.com.
Yep. Don't forget to listen to other shows on Golden Spiral. We are joined by many, many other amazing podcasters. And looking forward to talking to you all next week. So until then, don't blink. Don't even blink.
Thanks for listening to Don't Blink, a Doctor Who fan podcast, part of the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network of shows. I am the Doctor in Utah, and the majestic tale of a madman in a box are used with permission by Silver Screen Records. They're composed by Murray Gold and performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Ben Foster. Taken from the original Doctor Who soundtrack, Doctor Who Series 6, available on Silver Screen Records.